latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. And coming up toward the bottom of the hour, and Richmond Leori is poking around the backside as well, I think. And we talked to Dave Grenig earlier, and here's Rich. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Steve. I actually still am on the backside. There's turf workers today, and Chris is out there on the turf course, and I am enjoying this beautiful morning.
Well, and we had a surprise visit from Rich yesterday as he was hanging out with the Haskins and the Friedbergs, the whole scene, the Fifth Avenue scene. And that's really, you know, that whole Fifth Avenue thing has really kind of only cultivated in, what, the last 10 years. I mean, those houses were always there, but then suddenly it became a thing.
Well, you know, I was actually ahead of that curve. I lived there for about 8 years. I rented the same house, the second house off the back gate of Oklahoma. My backyard backed up to the horse path right by the track. And I would walk out every morning. There used to be a kid with a coffee stand right there, get my coffee, walk in, do my Oklahoma rounds, and then get in my car and drive over to the main track. But I loved living there. And then people started buying them up, and I wasn't smart enough to jump on that trend, but I was ahead of the curve there, Steve.
Well, now it's become, it's kind of a McMansion scenario where, you know, you got crazy people buying two lots and knocking them down and building, building these giant homes or renovating the existing home into, you know, something palatial. Certainly good for the real estate values in and around Saratoga. Not that they need much help, but being that close to the track and being able to sit in the back, you know, right in your own porch and watch horses work, it's pretty cool for those that haven't seen. Rich?
It's really cool. And actually, though, it got in my way one day. I wanted to ride a steeplechase race, and I was asked to school a horse over fences. They wanted to see if I actually could jump, which I could. And I was jumping the horse over fences, and my son Joey was in the backyard, and he went in the house and told Carmella, Dad's jumping a big gray horse over fences. And she came out onto the turf course, into the infield where I was schooling the horse, and said, you think I'm sticking around here while you get yourself killed doing this? As many nights as I spent in hospitals with you, I'm leaving now. So that killed my steeplechase dream.
That's great. That's hysterical.
So that was it.
I love it. Well, we keep you on the ground at this point. It's too late for those interests. I love it. Tony's talked about that too, actually, about horses. You know, they're natural jumpers. I mean, we see them jump shadows on the racetrack. So
When you get a good one too, a horse that really, really is good at it and leaves, you know, with the right amount of distance. And, you know, as a kid, I was riding show horses, working at Hunting Hollow Farm. Hugh Cassidy was a big equestrian guy. He said, kept telling me I was going to be an Olympic champion. By the time I was 12, I was jumping 5-foot fences. And then I found Pony Club and these kids were racing ponies. And I went, forget that. I want to go fast. I was like Ricky Bobby. I want to go fast.
Well, you've told those stories about not only did you want to go fast, you wanted to hustle. You wanted to hustle those kids at the pony races.
Oh, we made a lot of money. our ponies were little racehorses. They showed up with stock saddles. We had an exercise saddle. I'd ride 2 inches off of their back and had silks, Caliente. I thought I was really doing it.
So great. Well, got to turn our attention to the feature. I want to get your Travers thoughts, Rich. And, you know, the more you look at this race, the more entertaining it is. The people were hoping to get Maximum Security Game Winner here as well. It didn't happen, but it doesn't take away from a very interesting cast of 12.
No, I think it's a great race, a great betting race, a lot of interest, intrigue, how the race is going to, pan out. I've been a Tacitus fan. I think that, he's really focused. I like the little short blinker cups they put on him. It seems like his first work with them, he was a little unsure of himself. Second work was excellent with them. He's been very unlucky. But, I don't like when I hear people talk about him like the way they did Dollar Bill years ago. He's just been unlucky, like stumbling at the break, things like that. Rallied on the wrong part of the track after that stumble. I think he's probably the most suited to the mile and a quarter. But I have to say, the way Code of Honor worked up to this race, he's going to be my top selection. I just thought his last work, the way he's moving, the enthusiasm, the reach on his stride, I was really, he won me over with his last work up to the race. And a horse that I actually, even though you're on a big race in the Derby at a mile and a quarter. I've had some reservations about him really wanting a mile and a quarter, but I started thinking about it. I never thought Coronado's Quest wanted a mile and a quarter, but you know, Shug had him honed to the moment, and he won the Travelers up here going a distance that he probably wasn't suited for, and I think Code of Honor is more suited to it. He's my horse. I'm on him. I'm going to use him in Tacitus, but he's my top selection.
Right, that's who I ended up landing on too, as it happens. And you know, you can speak to this because I brought it up yesterday. Not that Shug is talking trash, but to see him as upbeat and I used the word ebullient yesterday, to see him this way telegraphs that the horse certainly is coming in as good as he could possibly want.
Yeah, it seems like he's very confident. And, you know, Shug's not a guy that's going to wear his emotions on his sleeve. But you know what? The horse has just had a great 5 weeks or so here. I think he's done, you know, tremendous. And Shug's at his best when he has a plan and he's able to execute that plan. And he's been able to do that with this horse. And from the Dwyer, you know, that mindset that he was going to, from the Dwyer to the Travers and train him up to it. And he's really trained brilliantly. I really like him. And the last work won me over.
Any other insights about the, you know, some of the horses that you've been watching, you know, coming out of the Curlin, coming out of the Jim Dandy? Who else should we be aware of that's either you know, added weight? You know, certainly Tax seems to be a horse didn't draw well necessarily for, you know, for what they're hoping to do, but kind of get the feeling that he's moved in the right direction.
Yeah, Danny Gargan's done an incredible job with this horse, and he is training brilliantly. I mean, he looks great on the racetrack. He's another one. I think the Mendoza line for him is the mile and an eighth. I just have a hard time seeing him being as efficient at the mile and a quarter. And I think Tassis is just a better horse than him, even though, you know, he beat him last time. You just look at the trip Tassis had, but he's doing great. You can't, certainly if anybody likes him, I'm not going to try to talk them off him. Both of Chad Brown's horses are training extremely well. I get the feeling that Highest Honors would be the one that appreciates the mile and a quarter more of the two. A long shot who looked incredible on the track this morning, Everfast for Dale Romans. I would not leave that horse out of your exotics. I don't know that he'd be good enough to win it, but I think he could hit the board at a big price. He looks as good as a horse could look. I was very impressed with him this morning.
How about that? And certainly Dale, you know, along with Dallas Stewart in this race, both of them have built up their reputations as spoilers to one degree or another, whether it's in exotics or you know, winning everything. And as a reminder, Everfast was second in the Preakness. let's not forget. You're right, as an exotic candidate, what's wrong with him? And I, you know, you bring up a topic I was going to use with Tony yesterday. Tony ended up in a meeting, so we couldn't do our segment. I was going to give him a jockey issue. Two jocks being discussed in this race, Rich, and I want you to you know, provide your perspective. I saw some people saying that they can't get behind Mucho Gusto because of Joe Talamo. And I just cringe when I see this nonsense. And Joe Talamo has ridden him every single race of his career. And then I see the people that are questioning Dale using Martin Chuan, who's only won 1,200 races in his career, the majority of them in South America. But they basically saddle horses and run them in packs to wire the same way in South America. A guy that's won 1,200 races, and Joe Talamo, I think his resume speaks for himself. Why would anybody discount a horse, even in a field like this, against, you know, the quote-unquote best jocks in the game? Why should somebody question guys like this? I don't get it.
Well, I think people overthink certain situations. It is still horse racing. Yes, of course, you know, you've got a tremendously talented jockey colony here. But, you know, there are other guys, and, you know, Joe Talamo, he's been doing extremely well in California for a number of years now. He's ridden this horse very well and been very successful with him. Why would you change, you know, midstream then when a guy has a familiarity with the horse? He did nothing wrong last time when he was second to Maximum Security. I mean, we couldn't have given a better ride. I'm not as familiar with Martin Schwann, but Dale likes him. Dale's talked about him. He's asked me to go watch tape of him. He says the guy's a tremendous finisher on a horse. And you're going to put a guy in this situation. He is going to make the most of the situation. He's not going to look at Everfast and go, well, he's 30-1 morning line. He's going to go, I'm in the Travers, and I want to, you know, I'm excited about being in the Travers, and I'm going to try to, you know, get all I can get instead of, you know, being dismayed about riding a 31 shot. He's going to be pumped up about riding the Travers. So horses feed on energy, you know, and excitement and positive energy. I think it's a great move putting him on because you know he's going to be excited and happy to be in the race. You could put him on Francis the Mule, and he's going to get the best out of him, if you know, because of that that desire and the excitement level.
I just wanted to throw that out because I was going to bring it up with Tony because I saw, you know, a lot of people the one with Talamo particularly. I don't. You know, this horse has never been off the board. He's 5-8.
Well, I don't know who said you know or is questioning that. I haven't really read much of that, but probably people that never rode horses, or at least never rode races.
Well,
is that fair?
That's fair. Yeah, that very fair. And I'll remind people of something that has been subtly explained the last couple of years. You know, first of all, Mike Smith can't ride every single stake horse on the West Coast. So the why isn't Mike Smith on the horse? That one drives me insane. And then there's the element of the fact that there's certain horses that may need a stronger physical, younger, more physically powerful individual than Mike Smith. Mike Smith can't be plugged in to every single horse. It's just crazy to think that. And, you know, Joe Talamo, it's obvious that Baffert reaches for him with certain kinds of physical horses that need a physical rider.
Well, I think you make a great point. And if you go back and watch his last work, Joe Talamo's aboard for that work. He's a horse that you got to peck at and pedal a little bit. I won't say exactly like a bicycle, like if you're not pedaling, he's not running, but he definitely needs that kind of direction. And it seems like he has, you have to remind him constantly, you know, to stay to task. So, again, when a guy knows a horse too, and a horse that, you know, is not going to run into the bridle and take you into the race, you want a guy that's familiar with it because he's not going to go, well, I'm out of horse. I have no horse. He knows that he's got to take it from him, as opposed to, you know, waiting for him to give it.
Well, I know that there's occasions where we look back and say, oh, you know, so and so made the wrong decision and got that horse beat. But to me, the carrying on, the hand wringing over jockeys, to me is a little much. I do like certain scenarios when, you know, certain kinds of riders that are, you know, strong finishers get on a horse that, you know, is going to be a closer. I mean, when you see Lascano and Rosario, you know, move to a horse that, you know, needs that kind of a finish. Okay, you can talk about that, or, you know, somebody on the front end that is, you know, is very quiet, and, you know, Saez getting on a horse with some speed that, you know, Louis is going to put him on the lead and, you know, do what he does when he gets on the lead. You know, there is some of that that goes on, but I am not somebody that is not betting a horse because a certain rider is on.
No, and I agree with that, and just because you kind of led me there, let me talk about, you know, front running riders. It's becoming a dying art. I see guys go to the lead, and this is generalization. Obviously, Luis Saez is a huge exception. He's aggressive. He bounces horses out of the gate, And the key to bouncing horse out of the gate is having them very balanced and square in the gate. You know, people, I get crazy when I hear people say why guys are good gate riders. It's because they get their horses standing perfectly, and they don't have to readjust that split second when the doors open. You know, it is a 1,000-pound animal with weight distributed on four legs. You need them as balanced as possible. But that aside, I see so many guys go to the lead, Steve, and as soon as they hit the front, they try to slow it down as much as possible. And then you've got horses that have good closing kicks in closer proximity to you, and then you're going to make it a sprint to the wire. Why do you think it would be a good idea, and I'm speaking to the riders that do this, to slow your horse down enough to keep that horse in the race and then think you're going to outkick the kicker? Like that's your strategy? That's your plan to decide that your horse is going to be able to outfinish a horse that's a natural finisher? I will never understand that as long as I live. The art to riding a front runner, if you make the lead and you get things the right way, fairly easy, at some point you have to take advantage of your advantage and start spreading the race. If you've gotten it easy to the 3/8 pole, don't keep sitting there until they're on top of you. Start making everybody else work to stay with you. Suck them in the race with you. Mm-hmm. That's going to help mute their closing kick. And if you can put three on them by the 8th pole, put three on them by the 8th pole with a speed horse. Don't sit and wait around. I don't understand how guys think that would be a key to success, slowing horse down and letting everybody else stay in the race.
I completely agree, and there's nothing I like better than, you know, when I see, you know, particularly going into the turn when Saez, you know, eases away, and now everybody is pumping and driving and asking and desperate, and his horse is just, you know, on cruise control invariably. Then he gets another boost off the turn, and he's gutted him.
Well, Kendrick Carmouche rode a race the other day. It was. If I was still teaching the apprentice jockey program here, that would be the race I would use as this is how you ride a front runner. That's a clear illustration. You know who's very subtly good at it? And I've seen it a little more from recently. Rajiv Marah. He is actually really good when he's got stock underneath him and he's on the lead. He'll give that little flip about the 3/8 pole and start padding a little bit of a lead. You know, there's a lot of young guys, and I think it's maybe they're not as comfortable on the lead because they're not quite sure how fast or slow they're going, that they tend to cramp up on these horses and slow them down too much. Allow your horse to use his stride to your advantage and don't allow horses to stay in the race easily. Make them work for it.
Absolutely. And just one of my favorite topics. I looked up and I see pictures of Luis Saez on three winners for us, Pretension, and twice on Williams Lucky Gray that did it just that way. And he's been putting on a clinic, just on and on.
Consistent. It's consistent. You know, you see guys that do something, but they don't do it with a consistency. So it almost leads you to believe, was that by accident? Or, you know, he's a guy that he's consistent about it. I love his enthusiasm. He rides every horse, all out. He's not a guy that looks at a form and goes, well, I don't think I have much chance. He walks out of the room and he's thinking how he's out of chance. I like that. I think from a trainer, a gambler's perspective, even now as a jockey's agent perspective, all you want is for your guy to go out there and give 100% effort. You know, don't go out there with a preconceived notion. Go out there. Listen, I used to get depressed when I rode. If I could ride 100-to-1 shot in the Kentucky Derby, but by the time we got to the starting gate, I had figured out 20 different ways I could win the race. Like, you know, maybe some crazy things would have to happen, but I had scenarios that this is how I could win the race. And then ultimately, when it didn't happen, I would literally be depressed for over a week, because I had built it up so much in my mind that I was going to win. And then when I didn't, it actually hurt. And I think really at the end of the day, if a guy gives you that kind of effort, that's really all you can ask. Be prepared, know what you're looking at, and give 120% every time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of which, you got your man, Chris Landeros, got some opportunities. including in the Jerkins, looking here, and Baracho, 8-1 for Rusty Arnold. Rusty's had a tremendous summer, not just at Saratoga, but out at Ellis as well. Some thoughts about the Jerkins from you.
Well, you know, Rusty has had an incredible summer, and this horse has had an incredible summer. He has trained incredible since his allowance win, which was against older horses and a good salty group of older horses. 7/8 is his perfect distance. He could not be doing any better. Now, obviously, if Chancelot shows up and runs anywhere near the race he ran last time, probably all of us are running for second, right? But I legitimately give Baracho a big chance. I don't think he's, you know, he's going to hit the board for sure. I really, really like him. Chancelot, super impressive. Runs his race, like I said, too tough. But he also was under a hard drive, winning by many lengths. And it's always been my experience when a horse is winning off like that and gets put to the whip the way he was, they tend to regress badly because they're running as hard as they can, and in essence, they're getting punished for running as hard as they can. And I think it does something to a horse mentally more than physically. That, like, hey, I'm doing everything being asked of me, and I'm actually, that's when a whip goes from being an aid to a punishment. So there is a chance that, you know, maybe he doesn't run the same race this time, and he also has an inside post, so he's got to get away clean. I heard somebody say, well, maybe they should run a rabbit in there. I don't think there's a rabbit that could keep up with him. I mean, who you would have to get, like, Rocket Man or Dash for Cash, one of these great quarter horses from days gone by, that'd be a rabbit with that horse.
Well, it is, you know, it's always one of the highlights of the day, beside the Travers, the former King's Bishop. And the other horse, the couple other horses in here, you know, the Hog Creek Hustle has been a wonderful story. Vicky Foley, you know, Mind Control, getting back to, you know, first of all, a place where he was successful, and you know, back, you know, focused in on the distance. Rowayton on the turn back as well. So it's got the elements that you like to make for a fun Alan Jerkins. Any other highlights from the card? Who you thinking about and looking forward to watching tomorrow?
You know, I think Midnight Bizou in Elate. I think it's a great rivalry. I don't think there's a lot that separates these two. If it was a mile and a quarter, you know, you'd say Elate all day. I actually would, you know, if I was her connections, the Breeders' Cup Classic might be on my radar for the mile and a quarter, because I think she's such a true mile and a quarter horse. But Midnight Bizou and her are just so talented. Midnight Bizou has been so consistent, so consistently good now in the, you know, with Steve Asmussen. And I think those two are going to put on a show. I'm really looking forward to the personal entry.
Rich, summer winding down. It's gone fast.
It's always a melancholy feeling, isn't it? I'm sitting out here behind Nick Vito's barn by Wayne Lucas's, down by the hill where they jog the horses up and down the hills. And, you know, you don't get those opportunities to do things like that with horses other places. Saratoga's unique that way, Saratoga and Fairhill. But, you know, it's just always great. You get to come up here, pursue your passion, and, you know, catch up with so many friends, people that you don't get to see, you know, throughout the year. I've just really, this year, more than any other year, have enjoyed that part of it, being out here every morning as a jockey's agent, just visiting, talking with people, and enjoying people's company and reminiscing about old times and, you know, talking about the things that we're excited about going forward. So, you know what? I know our game, our industry has issues, but mornings like this, mornings like yesterday, talking with everybody, I think we're going to be okay, because we got a lot of people that really love this and love the horses. And despite what outside interests may want to, how they may want to portray us, or, you know, what they may think, it couldn't be more wrong. I'm proud to be a horseman, and I'm proud to be a racetracker.
Well, and we're proud to bring Rich Migliori to the audience. Richard Migliori on your Twitter machine, and say hi to Rich when you see him tomorrow. Rich, thanks so much. Glad we got the chance, and we'll be looking down toward a very brief Belmont season, but nonetheless, getting back downstate But we still have got another big weekend, Labor Day weekend. The two-year-olds come into focus. We got the Woodward, and that's shaping up to be okay. So plenty more to do. I appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.
Steve, thank you. And I'm on TV both Saturday and Sunday this weekend. So if anybody's interested, the Fox Sports shows, we will be on both days.
Excellent. And they've been wonderful as well. I actually got to watch for a couple of weeks while I was laying there like a goldfish out of the bowl.
Steve, thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Meg. Rich McLeori, folks. Let's take a break. Coming up toward the top of the hour. Got a lot to do. We'll do it with Mike Beer, Hammer, Scully DeRosa, and Nick Tamaro. Heavy duty handicapping the next hour plus. At the Races weekend preview, Travers weekend upon us. It's gorgeous. Hope you're coming up. Talk soon.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races coming up on 11 o'clock, just a minute or two away, and Mike Beer stepping in for some handicapping, run-and-gun handicapping for the Travers Day card. And before we talk about Travers, Mike, any clever ideas for today, the New York Bred Showcase?
Clever, I don't know. I like, let's see, just to give a couple of quick
thoughts. You know, in the eighth race, in the two-year-old race, I like Mission Wrap It Up for Bruce Brown. I thought that horse ran really well first time out. I'm going to give him the wet track, you know, sloppy track chasing excuse for his last race, where he didn't run great, but I don't think that's the trip he really wants. So in this race, back on fast dirt, you know, in a race where he doesn't have to do the chasing of the pace, I just think he's going to run a lot better today than he did last time. And, you know, he's one of those horses who I just thought his debut was really good. So I want to give him a chance. I thought he'd be a fair price in this race.
Yeah, 5-1 take him.
Yeah, I thought he'd be fair. I'm gonna bet that horse. And, I wound up, you know, taking, I guess, to me, Dot Matrix is sort of the interesting horse in the West Point. There's a lot of different horses, I think, that can win that race. But I just wonder if a horse like Offering Plan, who's going to be short again, he just doesn't seem like he's been as good this year. There's a lot of speed in the race. Yeah, I feel like it could set up really well for him. A horse could get a really good trip. And I think if he runs his best race and things work out for him, I thought this was a field he could be, and he might be in that 4 or 5 to 1 range as well.
Nice. And, you know, back to the funny side for a second. I like Mission Wrap It Up, but I also want to use, in fact, I want to use both of Val Gold's horses, both of the two-year-olds. Cleon Jones, I think, has got a license. You know, people may forget that, you know, he's semi-disappointed in the debut, but then came back and finished like a house of fire. This is 6.5, 8 to 1, and there's every reason to believe that he can come back big. And Al's also got in the other race, he's got My Italian Rabbi, the 2-1 second choice behind Fierce Lady, and there's a big chance for Maya Engelhart and Al Gold to sweep the 2-year-old stakes today.
Yeah, they both have real chances in those races. You're right, especially, you know, Jeremiah's 2-year-olds. It seems like they all run. And My Italian Rabbi, the horses, I guess, will go back to Fierce Lady and make her the favorite again. Not that I, you know, disagree with that. But My Italian Rabbi just beat her, so I don't see why she can't do it again.
Exactly. That's one of the kind of oddities of sometimes, you know, of these races when they and when it comes to the state breds, they're invariably, we've talked about this a million times. The state breds are just invariably closer, you know, than sometimes they look on paper. You know, there's little to separate.
That's true. That's why these state bred cards that they put together, they're always great. Every year, you know, there's 3 of them every year. They're always good because they're well matched horses, and it all comes down to getting the right trips and the right setups, and different horses can win all the races.
Well, we can say the same about the Travers, well matched, and it's going to come down to trips, and it's going to come down to pace. How are you approaching the 150th running?
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, this race, I think it's easy to look at it and be a little disappointed that you didn't get, you know, some of the bigger names in the race. But even without Maximum Security and Game Winner making it, I don't know, you got a really good field. It's a big field. You know, everybody else showed up, even if the big names didn't. And I don't know, I just thought it was really a fascinating race. And, you know, I ultimately decided, and we'll just start with Tacitus. I mean, you know, I think you do have to sort of look at it and feel like he's the horse to beat. You know, is he going to get lucky this time? I don't really know what to say about this recent run of bad luck that he's been on. You know, horse who won 2 Derby preps to start off his 3-year-old campaign. And, you know, after that he hasn't won. But, I mean, I don't know. It's pretty easy for me anyway to look at his Derby and feel like he ran, you know, really well and got unlucky. Obviously, his Belmont, he was super unlucky in that race with the wide trip where Sir Winston got the perfect ride on saving ground on the gold rail for most of it. And last time it was just, you know, sort of a disaster. I don't know if I feel like any of it is Tacitus's fault. You know, it's just things that have happened and conspired against him. And now he's in a position where he kind of has to prove himself. You know, I'm not way against him, Steve. I think he is the horse to beat in the race. I'm using him prominently. The blinkers are going on. I don't really, you know, I don't have anything to say about that one way or the other. I guess you just have to make some kind of a change with him. I don't love equipment changes in big races like this, but he just seems like a horse who maybe needs something to turn things around. So I do think he's the horse to beat, and I thought outside of him there were a lot of different ways to go. You know, one of the stands that I'll just take is, you know, I like Code of Honor as a horse, and I'm going to try and get him out of there if he's going to be the second favorite in this race. you know, I like him. I think he's good. I wonder about a mile and a quarter for him, and that's all I'll say about it. He's run plenty of good races. You know, he's run well going a mile and a quarter. Obviously, his Derby was good. It was a race he could have won. You know, maybe the distance got him beat, and maybe it didn't. I'm just going to try and fade him a little bit, even if I use him in the, you know, pick four, pick five. And I wound up making Owendale my top pick. I don't know if he's good enough. You know, I'll say that right out front. I don't know if he's good enough to beat this field. But his Lexington to me was sort of the turning point for him. It was the coming out party. I thought he ran great that day. And even as I said that after the Lexington was over, I wasn't really buying into this horse. I wanted to see what he would do after the Lexington. And I thought he ran really well in the Preakness. I think he backed up the Lexington really well in the Preakness. And I think it suggests that he does fit with these horses. They took the path of least resistance last time a little bit and ran him in the Ohio Derby, you know, a race that he was just supposed to win. And I kind of like the way that he won it. You know, the pace got really slow in that race. After they went a little bit in the opening quarter, they really backed it down. He was last. Giroux stayed in. He got a run. I thought he won it pretty convincingly, even though the margin wasn't that big. And I like that he's inside. There should be speed in this race. There should be pace. And I like that he can save ground early. And then it'll be up to Giroux to get him a spot to run on the stretch. So I picked him on top in a race where I just think a lot of different horses can win.
You and I are more or less overlapped on those three horses. I put Code of Honor on top. Tacitus and Owendale are, you know, for different reasons, horses that with, you know, real chances to win. And I'm using Mucho Gusto. I have seen Baffert make this move, you know, too many times. And you know, to me, the pace question is the key element. And let me ask you what your thought is as to how they're going to look going into the turn. And I said earlier to Dave Grenig that Joel Rosario, to me, is the key to what is going to happen here, because he's between Tax to his outside and Mucho Gusto and looking at Bikinis to his inside. And Joel could make it very tricky for the speed horses, depending on where he is going to go and set up shop, because you know that he's going to find a way to get inside before the turn.
That's exactly right. You're going to see him come out of there running, but I don't think he's going to try and make the lead, but he's going to come out running and he's going to look to get over. Yeah, you're right. The paces could be a little confusing because, you know, it looks like looking at Bikinis has to go. I know Gargan, you know, has said the Tax is, you know, going to make the lead in here. We'll see if he actually makes it. I'm sure they'll come out of there running and get forward, and you know, we'll see how fast he has to go to get there, because, you know, it's not like there's a bunch of horses in here who want to be on the front, but there are a bunch of horses who want to get forward. And in a 12-horse field, if everybody's, you know, running to the first turn to try to get a spot, this thing could heat up a little bit early. Mucho Gusto, to me, I don't know, he makes plenty of sense. I'll, you know, admit that I haven't been a big fan of his, but, you know, I did like his Haskell. I did think that he ran well in the Haskell, you know, in a race where he took two different runs at maximum security. You know, is he here only because Game Winner didn't make it? You know, probably. But, you know, he works a bullet last week and Baffert puts him on a plane. So I guess he's doing well. He did run a 100 buyer last time. So, you know, the fact that he comes in off the best race of his life, I guess, is a good sign for him. He's just not a horse I've ever really liked that much. And, you know, he's, you know, what can he be in this race? Can he be, you know, any higher than 4 or 9 to 2? I don't know. We'll see how they bet the race. He wasn't one of the horses I loved, but maybe I could use him defensively.
On that topic, how do you expect them to bet this race? Because I saw the morning line come out, and of course, people fall over themselves to try to criticize morning lines.
Right.
I love the comment, oh, Chad Brown's horses won't be 10 to 1. Well, really? What are they going to be? 8 to 1? I mean, how can they be? It's a 12-horse field, and there's four horses that you've got to take more seriously than the Chad Browns, at least from a line-making standpoint. So how low could either one of them be?
Right. I'm with you on that, and that I don't get all the hand-wringing over morning lines. Anyway, you know, the morning line is good in New York regardless of what you think. So You know, it's not an easy line to make up here. Obviously, there's going to be mistakes, but I'm with you. You know, what price could Chad's horses be? They're going to take some money. Tacitus is going to be the favorite. Is he going to be an overwhelming favorite? I don't think he is. I think he will be the favorite in the race, but I don't think he's going to be, you know, any less than, I think he made him 5-2 on the line, or did he make him shorter than that? I think he made him
five to two.
Yeah, so I think that's probably what you're going to get. I don't think he's going to be shorter than that. Maybe he will be, but I don't think he will be. I think people are going to sort of back off and see where he lands. But he should be the favorite in the race. He's the horse to beat. After that, I don't know. I have no idea how they're going to bet the race. I do think Code of Honor is going to take money just because he's connections and he's off of a couple of really nice races. But after that, you know, I don't know how this race is going to be bet. I'm, you know, Mucho Gusto to me, I just feel like the Baffert thing plays into it. I thought, you know, he would be in, you know, around 5-1, maybe as low as 4. And after that, I just think you're going to get prices on just about anybody.
Well, you know, you mentioned as part of your treatment of Mucho Gusto, the 100 buyer, it's the only triple-digit buyer in the field.
That's right.
And that, you know, that draws eyes and, you know, how often do you have a chance to bet Bob Baffert in a high-profile event with coming in on paper the fastest horse?
Yeah. On dirt, almost never.
And third choice or fourth choice. So that's what makes this fun. This is a really fun Travers for that reason.
It's a great Travers, right? Go ahead.
Touch a few others. I know Elate is your best bet on the day, but touch on some of the other stakes and how you're approached. Let's do this one sequentially. Forgo, Ballerina, Jerkins, the sprints.
I'm not going to bet against Mottoli this time. You know, I tried it last time and didn't have the right horse. You know, I think he has excuses out of that race and in this spot being outside of Promises Fulfilled. I think he's just going to sit right off that horse or press him. And I'm just not going to try and beat him this time at a short price. I, you know, gave a lot of consideration of going back to Firenze Fire. I do think this race will set up well for him, and I think he has excuses for his last two races. But I'm not against Mottoli. I went him and Firenze Fire. They're really the only two I like. And the Ballerina, you know, I struggle with this race a little bit. I guess my main opinion in this race is that I know that she can win. I'm not a big separation of powers fan. You know, we'll see what happens with her. I was sort of against her. Come Dancing to me makes sense, but, you know, I don't love her being inside with all the other speed tour outside. Her races 2 and 3 back are very good. You know, last time you can't be too hard on her for getting beat by Midnight Beast, although I didn't think she ran great. And, you know, I just wound up picking Mia Mischief, and I'm happy to bet her if she's in that 5-1 range that they made her on the morning line. It sounds crazy to say this because she's been in the exacta in 13 of her 16 starts, but to me she's not that consistent of a horse. She won't always run her best race, but when she runs her best race, she's really, really good. And I thought she ran her best race to win the Humana Distaff, obviously, a grade one. And I thought she ran her best race 2 back, even though the figure went way down. She was in a long duel with Covfefe that day, and she prevailed. I thought she ran great. And, you know, I don't know what they were doing last time, rating and conceding the lead to Minute to Stardom. I think maybe Asmussen was thinking, you know, the Ballerina's coming up, and we're not going to send her into a duel this time. I think they'll be more aggressive with her in this race, and I think she'll be forward. And I think this is a field that she could easily beat with her best race.
Is Chancelot, can you beat him? How do people bet this, and how do they do the multis? Is he a dead single or not?
I looked at it this way. I'm he's the only horse that I'll use. If you want to talk about the ABC method, which I, you know, do to a degree, not overall, but, you know, to me, he's way the horse to beat in here. I mean, he could regress 20 points and beat this field. I don't know. You know, the other thing about this Jerkins is it's very surprising to me. There's no speed in this race. I know he has the rail. It's not a great draw for him, but he's faster than these horses early, and there's no other speed in the race. I mean, I don't see how he just isn't on an open length lead up the backstretch in here because nobody can keep up with him. I think...
What happened here? Did Mike drop the phone? I'm not sure what happened here. Case, pick him up if you would. There we go. That was that. At first, I thought that Mike might have just dropped the phone, but usually you hear the that noise of reaching for it. I didn't sound like he was reaching for it. Mike Beer brings up a great point here with Chancelot, and we said this after the draw, coming out of the draw yesterday when we just looked at the fields at the start of the show. How is he not? Yeah, how is Mike, laying out exactly the scenario? And to tell you what this reminds me of is Private Zone. I think Mike's back with us.
Yeah, are you losing me there, Steve?
Yeah, it was crazy. It sounded like you dropped the phone, but then
really?
we heard background noise, but we didn't hear you.
Oh my God! Well, but, the gist of it is I'm not betting against Chance a lot.
There you go.
And just taking backups with Baracho and mind control and row 8, and like the only other three horses I was really interested in. But I don't know. He just looks loose and gone to me in this race.
It reminds me of Private Zone when you used to look at races where if there wasn't somebody to run with Private Zone, you said to yourself, how does he lose?
Right. Remember when he won the Forego, right? Private Zone? I believe that was.
Yeah, I think he did actually.
Was he the one who got absolutely loose? And that was another race like this where it was a grade one sprint with no speed at all. And he was just like under a double arm bar up the backstretch with nobody going with him. It was crazy.
Now, if that's the case here, I agree. I don't see how. Although Rich Migliori said he didn't like, he did not like the way that he was being handled late by Jaramillo. Why Jaramillo felt the need to to stick him a couple of times was very strange.
Yeah, that was very strange.
Rich did say just before you joined us, he said, sometimes horses associate that with being punished for running mm-hmm. as well as he did. Mm-hmm. So,
okay, that's something to keep in mind, I guess.
Yeah, that's in the back of that. I'm sure that if he stubs his toe, we're going to revisit that topic. But Jaramillo has ridden him to. Three straight wins and two of them by open lengths. A couple of other thoughts. How about the two? How about the two turf stakes? What are you doing in the Boston and the Sword Dancer?
I'm not against Secret Message in the Boston Spa, who's been good this year. I wanted to bet significant form in the race. I get the drawbacks to her. I do think she's going to be a good price in this race. So that alleviates any concerns that I have. I just look at her as a horse who has very specific distance preferences. Last year as a three-year-old, I thought she ran well, but I don't think she wants to go 9 or 10 furlongs. I think those races are just too far for her. This distance, a mile to a mile and a 16th, I think this is what she really wants. I liked her return off the layoff in the Intercontinental. I thought she ran great that day. Taking a shot at 5.5, they did what they had to do because they didn't want to go longer with her, but... she doesn't want to go 5.5. I think this is a great distance for her, and I think she's going to be a fair price in this race. So I just want to bet her. I'll use Secret Message with her. And, Starship Jubilee is a nice horse. I think she might get overlooked a little bit in this race. So I could use her, but I just wanted the best significant form in this field.
All right. It'd be interesting to see if Chad is going to pit husband and wife against each other in this race with
that's right.
Peter Branton and Stephanie Seymour.
That's right.
And then the Sword Dancer.
And then the Sword Dancer, I don't know. Listen, Annals of Time is, I feel like this could be a little bit of a trap, especially if he is going to be the favorite in the race, and I don't know if he will be, but I can see it happening. He's really, really good. Is he just running in this race a mile and a half because he's just good right now and he's a horse who's had so many problems and this is the race that's coming up and they don't really want to run him this far, but what are they going to do, wait another month to find a race for him? I think they just feel like they might have to run him now because he's good and he's healthy and they gotta keep him on the track. That might be going into the thinking, but he's really good. If he gets the mile and a half, I think he's going to be really hard to beat in the air. So I'm not against him. And the only, the two horses to me that I like are the two, logical sort of mainstays in the division, Channel Maker and Sadler's Joy. I actually feel like Sadler's Joy off the layoff in the Bowling Green ran pretty well. Getting buried on the inside as a closer with no chance to get out, that is not what this horse wants. So being on the outside this time, I think Castellano or Lefkano takes over, keeps him in the clear. He's going to come with a run in this race. So it was, you know, mostly Annals of Time and Sadler's Joy. I'll use Channelmaker because he always gets good trips. I didn't really, you know, love any of the other horses in here. Yeah, Primo can win. But I thought he got a great trip last time. I didn't see his excuse for not winning the Bowling Green, even if he was prepping.
I agree on all fronts, and I'm going to use both channels, Channel Cat, Channel Maker, and that was a courageous performance by Channel Cat.
Yeah, you're right. I shouldn't give him short shrift. He actually ran really well. I know he had the best trip in the race, but he actually ran really well last time.
Now, and then Sadler, who's I'm a sucker for Sadler's Joy and Woods Lane Farm and Annals. I mean, those are the four in some various combination. Well,
right.
Mike, beside the stakes, before we go, anything else on the card? We always focus on the stakes, but there is a late pick four that incorporates races 12 and 13, state bred allowance and a maiden race. So we start the card with a nice second level allowance group on the grass. We've got 2-year-old maidens. Haven't really looked closely at that field. Going 6 furlongs. These are boys, mostly first timers. It's 4 and 4. 4 firsters and 4 second timers. We got maiden fillies and mares on the grass going long, and we've got a 6.5 furlong first level allowance sprint with a dozen, including some very familiar names like T Loves a Fight. And this is a very good race, and there may be a price to be had. And what are you doing in the fourth?
The fourth is, let me see, who did I take in that race? Oh, this was the race where Shug has Performer on the outside. He entered Performer in the Better Talk Now on Sunday, so I think he's scratching to run that horse on turf. And that horse is interesting to me. I actually took Type 10 on top in there. I think he's like 15-1 morning line. I like this horse cutting back to sprint. They tried to stretch him out. I think that's fine. But I think he's got more of a sprint pedigree, and I really liked his first two career starts as a sprinter. So Asmussen coming back, it's a layoff. You know, that always concerns me. I don't like to take horses off of layoffs if I can help it. But at a price, if he's going to be a price in this race, I'm just going to bet him. I think this is sort of a wide-open race, but there are horses in here who have some improving to do. I think this horse is going to take a big step forward. I'm going to bet him, and I could give Payne another chance. He was very disappointing last time, but his race is 2 and 3 back, make him way too tough for this field. So, Payne and Type 10 for me, but I'll bet Type 10 if he goes off anywhere near his morning line.
Nice. I thought that there were any number of horses that could win in here. And in fact, I was talking to Gary last night. Cecilia Mike is going to be a very nice price in here. And he's that race at Belmont in June. He runs that race.
Yep.
He's very competitive in here at a nice number, and he's going to be coming late. And you know, Dylan Davis will be hustling and sticking and jiving.
That's true. Very true.
Yeah, and we're gonna play a little bit of Gary in the fourth too. I love it, Mike. Thanks so much. I'll see you out there, and best of luck tomorrow and today.
You too, Steve. Thanks a lot, bud.
Mike Beer, everybody, DRF_Beer. We're going to stay right here. Rick Hammerly listening in, and Hammer is getting ready, considering that we lost Peter Fonda this week. Hammer is going to do almost a bit of an easy rider, and he's going to head east, not Route 66, but he may cross Route 66 at some point. Hammer, good morning.
Steve, good morning.
Getting ready to
Can
pull out,
me?
Aren't you? Yeah, yeah, I got you.
Okay, that's weird because I called on the other phone to check in, and I'm on hold on the other phone. Okay.
Oh.
Are we good?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, great. Yeah, we are almost hitting the road. I said, you know, it's funny, we talked last night, and I said I'd be on the road somewhere. And Gina, my wife Gina, says, just out of curiosity, she says, is there any reason you're leaving in the middle of the night? You know, I like to get up and get on the road like 4 or 4:30 or something. And I said, You know, there really isn't. I'm driving 2,000 miles. I got 3 days, 4 days to get there. So why am I leaving at 4 in the morning when I could leave at, 8 or 9, relaxed? And so that's what I decided to do. So anyway, I figured we'd get the show in, and then we'll put California literally in the rearview mirror and head to Kentucky Downs.
Outstanding. And what do you got planned along the way? Anything circled? Any place you know you're going to stop? That kind of thing?
You know, it's wild. I was talking, Gina goes, where are you going? I have probably made this run, 20 times in my life, headed that way. Kingman, Flagstaff, Albuquerque.
That is Route 66.
Driving past the Grand Canyon. There's not a whole lot, to see that I haven't seen. So I'm pretty much going to roll until I maybe get to Tulsa. I might look up a friend there. And then, one of my number one things I want to do is get to Ellis Park. I've never been to Ellis Park, so there's a day in there, actually, I think the 30th. They're running at Ellis Park. I think I might try and get up and see that. And, I'm going, for me, I'm going to uncharted territory, not that I haven't been there before, but I don't know a whole lot of people, and that's part of the intriguing thing. That's why I signed up to do both Kentucky Downs and Oaklawn. It's all new. It's fresh, new people, new experiences. I'm going to learn a lot. And it's like a rebirth. I'm fresh, fit, and I'm ready to roll. So not a whole lot there. But, coming back, I got a few things going on. But it's all good. I've signed up for about the next 8 months to do some crazy things, most of it away from home. And looking forward to it.
Outstanding! This will be an adventure. We'll check in as it unfolds.
Oh, you'll be with me the whole time. It's great, and I know we had talked about you getting down to Kentucky Downs. Obviously, that's not going to happen this year, but I think I see a lot more media attention to that meet, and well, deservedly so. Let me tell you, the stakes closed on Wednesday, 2 days ago. They closed all the stakes on one day, which is pretty good. They have 14 of them. Why not get it done? And I think the average in each stake was 55. Some had 70, approaching 80 in each stake. And out here, we're used to hustling, maybe getting 15 or 16. And the enthusiasm people want to run there is tremendous. And as I look back on the charts, I see, and you go, wow, it's pretty much, it's like a local meet. It's almost a thank you to the local Kentucky horsemen, because with so many horses trying to get in these races, if you're an out-of-towner, it's hard for you to put a horse on a plane and hope you get in. And if you don't, you've shipped for nothing. And so the local guys, it's just a local ship for them. So they can just enter two or three times, and not just the stakes, but the overnight races. And put them on a plane or put them on a van and ship for a couple hours. So people say, I always wonder, well, how come more out-of-towners don't come? Well, they want to come, and some do, but, when you're going to get 40 and 50 in a maiden race, you're taking a shot because everyone's equal on the draw. So a few little idiosyncrasies there, and we'll be reviewing that meet a little bit more next Friday, right before the opening on the 31st. So it's all good. It's all good. I mean, like I said, I'm putting California in the rearview mirror for a while. I got a kick out of the article I read yesterday about the CHRB, and we're going to run less dates. And I'm thinking to myself, what a concept. 10 years ago, at least, just sitting around discussing this, trying to get breaks in between meetings. I remember on the show going, over and over. I think there was a period where it was four straight years, 208 consecutive weeks of racing. And you can, heaven forbid, you take a day away. And, these are some of the things that when you do it on your terms, it's good. But when you're doing it to catch up, sometimes it doesn't work. I mean, less is definitely needed out here. And I hope the best for everybody involved. But I got another text this morning from another ex-shareholder that said, can you believe this? If we'd have approach this 10 years ago, they'd have laughed us away. But anyway, good luck to everybody, and I'm here, but I'm glad to be headed away and trying something different. And not much to talk about out here this weekend, really, stake wise last weekend was the was a big week, and I had it right. I mean, we were going over the race, and I really did discount the Invaders in the big race, but that sure didn't zero in on Sadler mistakenly. And when it's all over, you look back and you go, let me get this straight. John Sadler has won basically every stake at the meet, and the leading rider, Flavien Prat, is just having a year to, you know, to die for, win the race by many, and the head scratcher. But tell you what, John and his owners, the Hronis and his brothers and all the crew there, they've done a great job buying horses from out of town and bringing them in.
Yep.
Over the years. Not many, but the half dozen they've done have really they've picked out some good ones to fit in here on the circuit. And now's the time, because there's some weaknesses in some of the divisions out here, but not too many weaknesses at Saratoga. I'll tell you, that's a great card there. The Travers, you know, always comes up good, especially so with the numbers here. And what a goofball year with the 3-year-olds. I tell you, I spent a ton of time going over and over and up and down. And I don't know if you follow that contest with the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation. It's a weekly contest that guest people make up the list. Well, Nick Camaro made up the list, the questions this week, and most of them have to do with Travers Day and Travers Week, and boy, some of them are very tough. And one of his questions is on the favoritism of the race. It's over or under 220-1. And what do you think? You think the favorite's going to be 220 to under or over in this race?
This just came up with Mike Beer, and I thought Mike made a good point, and I think that the strength of interest from, you know, the two Chads, Shug, Baffert, Tax, Gargan, I just think there's too many other interesting horses, so I'm going to say over.
You know, I originally had over, and now I start thinking, I think the Baffert might have been the final straw to say over, because it's Baffert's going to take some money, even though it's, you know, it's a bullpen horse, but, you know, him when it comes to those horses, these horses are ready to roll. I kind of agree, and I see Tacitus as, you know, he was 9-5 in the 9-5 in the Belmont, and Code of Honor, you know, was a little bit over even money last time, and that's what scares me, one of those two horses, but they're probably going to split their money. So anyway, I agree. I see this as a total toss-up. I mean, Code of Honor, I saw you picked it in your Beat the Pick selection, which is great. I mean, it didn't matter who you picked, you got to go somewhere else. I don't think anybody can zero in on it just for that. Owendale looks good. I tell you what, I'm looking at a horse that I haven't heard yet. I watched some film on him, very intrigued by, coming out of the Curlin. Kieran's horse, Endorsed.
Hmm.
Coming from the outside, now this is his first time going super long last time at Mile and Eight, and if you watch, he moved right with Highest Honors, and they were together for, you know, a quarter mile, and this horse got a little tired inside the eighth pole towards the 16th pole, but didn't quit. You know, there's a difference between, you know, kind of giving it up. So, second time going, further distance. Kieran knows exactly what he's doing. Obviously, he's an improving lot. No harm in getting Rosario back. He's one for one on the horse. I'm looking for a blow up in here, and although I do like Code of Honor as well, I'm going to keep my eye on Endorsed. Maybe get 25-1, 25-1, and see if he can do it. I just see it as being that type of race. Tacitus, he just seems to find trouble, and you know, stumbling at the break, or this happens, or a couple of bump, you know, bump starts. Sometimes he just finds trouble. You know, putting the blinkers on is not one of Bill's you know, win type moves. I think you know, he's doing it for a reason, and not real sure. I think they're still trying to find him. Very talented horse, but I can't you know, I can't see betting on him at you know, near 2-1. So I'm looking for a little bit of an upset in here. I don't know if I got the right horse, but I'm gonna take a shot and try to zero around Endorsed and see how that goes.
You know, I talked about Endorsed leading into the draw, and and even out of it. I settled on Code of Honor, but Endorse was a horse going into the Jim Dandy I just had no interest in, and then I thought he ran really, really well. And I mean, it's hard off that effort to discount him. And I think I don't know if he can win. If he wins and upsets, I don't have any issue, keying a horse like him. But to me, he's instrumental in how the race is going to unfold, because Rosario could make real trouble for a bunch of people, particularly for Tax, if he's going to string Tax out, into the turn, or if he inhibits, somebody on his inside who's trying to make the lead. It's going to be, I think, the race, whatever happens, onto the backstretch, it's key around Endorsed. So I like the pick.
All right, well, good. And Mucho Gusto, we've liked this horse since the very beginning. I liked how they've. I guess he was coming from the bullpen because they had game winner, and I guess he was probably pointing for the Pennsylvania Derby, which you can still make, obviously. But what a nice horse to have in your bullpen. But I like how they've changed his style a little bit. He used to be you get to the front and improve your position type of horse. And I like the fact that he's adjusted well. He seems like a very athletic type horse. Joe Talamo. He can ride with the best of them out here. I'm really sticking with him. And, just the way he come off the pace a little bit, especially in the Haskell, going a mile and eight, and that's the question mark, whether the distance is going to hit him in the head. But I don't know. This horse, it's Baffert, and I don't really see him in a winner's circle, but another horse I see involved. But when you have 12 of them in here, it's great. And you told me the weather's going to be good.
Yeah.
And I wish I was driving straight through to Saratoga, but I've already made my stamp there. And you had Mig on earlier, and he's such an upbeat guy. It's just he's great. But aside from his talent as an ex rider and jocks agent, he's a wonderful tour guide. He led us on, gave me some tips on some hiking trails. He's very avid hiker in the region around there, and we were looking for a waterfall, so he sent us up to, I think it was Sleeping Cove or Sleeping Rock waterfall. Yeah. Up near Lake George, and so that was good. And I said next time he says you got to come south into the Catskills, and we'll do some things there, but. It's just great to hear him talk, and you're around him. He's just so positive about everything, and so I'm glad to hear that he's enjoying the jock agent life and the life behind the TV, in front of the TV, excuse me. And then you had Greg Montgomery on, who another guy who seems like just the most the nicest guy in the world, who does those Saratoga and Travers posters. And I'll tell you, I don't get them every year. But I have three or four of them that I've gotten throughout the years when something happens. And we did get the Arrowgate one, and I sent you the picture. It's framed, signed by Baffert and Mike Smith, and we have a little wall, like when you walk in the house, and whoever walks in the house, that's the first thing they see is that Travers Arrowgate pose. They're just so, I don't know what they are. They're great. They're he's got, I don't know how he gets the subject, and hearing him talk, he'll see something and get inspired, but everyone's different. And they're just great. So if you come to town and you're walking, you got to pick up a poster every now and again, and get it framed and stick it up in your house. And it's one of those types of art where you can kind of stare at, and then every once in a while you'll see something that you never saw before in the corner, some little detail that he's done. But anyway, it's when you're talking to him, it's Travers Week, and things are kind of wrapping up. And I'm glad you're back on the trail and back into the game, and it's great to see.
Well, Hammer, safe travels. We'll check in with you as the day and as the travel week unfolds. Looking forward to send out some missives out onto Twitter and along the road. A little cross country jaunt, and people will chime in as you're traveling, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds great, and we will send out a few tweets along the way. So glad your health as well, and happy Travers weekend, everybody out there. Good luck.
Away they go, folks. Hammer, away he goes toward Kentucky and working at Kentucky Downs. And then after the Kentucky Downs experience, he'll start to focus in on his new role at Oaklawn as well. We have got to focus pretty closely these next 22 minutes because that's what we've got to fill out on this Travers Preview Friday and Scully DeRosa and Nick Tamaro. So it's going to be a intense sequence of handicapping. And let me think, see what Casey's achieved here. We've got Ed DeRosa to say hello to first. I think. Eddie? Where are you? Say hello, Ed. Say hello to the audience. All right, Casey's putting them together, and I do hear, I can hear background noise. Ed, speak up. No? All right. Usually that's an invitation when you tell Ed to talk, you usually get a response if he can respond. All right, I'll give Case I can hear him in the background. So let him handle that. Let me give you a little bit of the changes that for today, for those of you while we get the boys lined up. And I was curious mostly about what there was a couple of issues, Linda Rice and Chad in particular. So let me give you, they just went up actually in the last 10 minutes. They were a little late getting out. All right, here we go. You've got 55 scratched. So 55 will run tomorrow. All right, 55 tomorrow. And as it happens, Take Charge Aubrey and Out of Orbit actually scratched as well out of it. And Voodoo Song did scratch as Dave Grenig was speculating. So both of the curiosities both came to pass. Both Voodoo Song and 55 both scratched. Here we go. I think we've got one or the other or both. We'll say one more time. Ed DeRosa, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice. There's Ed. We'll say James Scully, good morning. Oh, no Scully yet. Okay. All right. We'll get Scully. Maybe we'll put we're going to get you and Scully and Tamaro in here in the next 20 minutes. Ed, let's dive right in, and maybe we'll do it sequentially instead. Some thoughts. Start with the Travers and work your way around.
Yeah, well, pretty excited. 12-horse field, and Steve, with the way this three-year-old division's been, this race means a lot in my mind to the end of the year picture. Obviously Maximum Security in the mix as well, but he's on the sidelines and really is given any one of these horses who wins and can win again a real chance at a stake in the three-year-old division. So this is what you want in a race of this magnitude, and looking forward to seeing how it plays out. And I'm hoping it plays out with Mucho Gusto on top. Just going to trust that last out race in the Haskell. Got a solid number, certainly on Brisnetti, topped 100, which has actually not been that common this year with this group. And the mile and a quarter, I've seen plenty of discussion about. But the sire won the Classic, and Giant's Causeway, I think a great broodmare sire, very versatile, and also the broodmare sire of Tax, who doesn't seem to have any issues running long. So I think Mucho Gusto, we'll see if we actually get 6-1, but he's definitely my pick on top. And what is a competitive race, just having a hard time taking the two obvious favorites in Tacitus and Code of Honor.
No, nothing wrong with that. And I think that that's what everybody's doing. I think they're taking that approach. You know, they want to have, you know, the obvious contenders, the major players, and then everybody is kind of feathering in the prices that they think could possibly upset, but would certainly, you know, be necessary when building try and super tickets. So, and I think it's a very fair, you know, a very fair approach, and there's nothing wrong. I'm not going to caution anybody on just believing in Tacitus and figuring out, you know, how to make money off of him. If you believe that, you know, everything is going to go right the way they'd like to see, and he certainly deserves a clean, fair trip that gives him a you know, fair chance to win. So it's a wonderfully entertaining addition to this race. And as I said earlier, I don't think any superfecta or too many superfectas would surprise that, you know, maybe, right?
Yeah, no, you actually took the next thought I was going to make out of my mouth. Obviously, I'm a big multi-race player. I do like the pick fours and pick fives, but I mean, just looking through this card, I think if, you know, there's a race you believe in, and certainly the Travers with the 12 horses, I find more opportunities maybe in really tackling the races you have a strong opinion in rather than trying to smash a square peg in a round hole if you're not overly comfortable with the multi-race sequence. And, you know, the Travers can be frustrating because you can sort of be right and totally miss your super. But with the 12 horses and the fact that, I mean, honestly, any one of them, I wouldn't believe you if you tried to give me a reason why a horse couldn't finish fourth. I mean, you can give reasons why it wouldn't happen, but in terms of a complete toss, I just don't see any in this race from the exotic. So you just have to have your opinions and bet them accordingly. And if you're right, it just has the look of one of those supers that can be completely logical and pay twice what you think it would.
Well, and that's also by virtue of a 12-horse field, you get that benefit. And,
exactly.
You know, Rich Migliori in the last 40 minutes threw in a little bit of an endorsement of Everfast, you know, and said, you know, the logical proviso. You know, don't think he can necessarily win, but he loves the way he looks coming in. And, you know, how surprised would anybody be if he clunks up for second, third, fourth. Same thing with Dallas Stewart, who gets the benefit of Mike Smith on Chess Chief. You know, was the horse that was closest to Mr. Money last time. I have the one horse that has not been brought up by anybody all week, really, in any shape or form, is Scars Are Cool. And it, you know, at the very least, he's a horse coming off of a win over the track that looked pretty damn good. And you know, Sagamore, you know, likes to be involved in these kinds of races. And yes, Global Campaign had been their expected player. But, you know, here's a horse that, you know, nobody's even mentioned at any level.
No, that's too bad. I mean, I think he's certainly as capable of the two long shots you mentioned, maybe be in the mix. And I put out a fair odds line on Twitter, and it's not something I do too often, but I'm not afraid. You know, the benefit of the fair odds line is if I think a horse has very little chance, I can put in 100 or 200 to 1. And I had this horse right there with the other, you know, legitimate long shots. But again, I'm not going to be surprised if any horse is in the mix at the end. And, you know, with the 12 horses, like you mentioned, that's a chance where, yeah, it's a gamble to try to get him in the mix with, you know, a horse like Mucho Gusto and play tickets that basically can't chalk out. But I agree. I mean, a win over the track, and, yeah, he needs to improve, but a few of these do. And if a mile and a quarter does the trick, why not at a big price? So as I said somewhere, my plan is definitely I'm not going to split hairs between the 5, 20, 30 to 1 horses. I'm basically structuring my tickets where, you know, two of them or one with, you know, certain logicals has to be in the top three. And it's a gamble, but I just think the payoffs are going to be so much higher with those 12 horses. It's just worth taking a shot in what is a truly competitive race.
And you know, as you said that, and you're talking about the and we've talked a lot this morning about where the odds might shake out. If you broke this group into three, you know, into three categories, you know, the most likely winners, the, you know, the mid-priced long shots with, you know, win chance and more exotic capability, and then the four long shots, you know, the four long shot types are Laughing Fox, Everfast, Chess Chief and Scars Are Cool that are, you know, the Aragona's 30-1 shots. Then you've got that group that, you know, if Highest Honors win, will you be shocked? Would Looking at Bikini shock? Would Endorsed or Tax shock? No. And then there's the four most likely, Tacitus, Code of Honor, Mucho Gusto, and Owendale. So it's really a Chinese menu circumstance.
Yeah, exactly. And pair them accordingly. And we agree on the how they shake out. And I actually think that middle group may be the spot to fade other than Tax for this reason. In a race where you just have to figure out what your opinion is and bet accordingly, because they all factor for me in some way, the Curlin is the race I'm fading. And granted, that's not you know, all that big of a limb. None of these horses are in that group of favorites. But if I am going to try to spread liberally with that group you mentioned of the 30-1s, I got to cut somewhere with the logicals, and the Curlin is the prep. I'm just going to say, well, Looking at Bikini's faltered, Highest, like, I'm just unimpressed relative to how they may get bet. And I might be wrong. It is a competitive race, but I'll take the longer shots of the group of four.
And there's the anatomy of how, you know, how certain people approach their exotic plays, and we'll get some input. And speaking of that, that style of ticket building, Johnny D, and I, you know, Johnny in his Express Bet write-ups, he always does that, you know, with the, you know, here are your win contenders, here are your outsides, and here are your exotic you know, potentials, and you know, is very much focused on that same mentality when it comes to building tickets. And you know, we can do, we can't seem to connect with Scully, which, you know, we know he's in and around Saratoga. But I think we do have Nick Tamaro lined up. And so we might, spend the next 8-9 minutes closing out the morning, going back and forth with Ed and Nick. Okay. Casey's going to, put Nick on in a minute, Ed, and, we'll get his Travers look, and then we'll back on. Oh, or what, maybe we won't. So, all right, Case will work on Nick. In that case, Ed, we're going to rifle with you, Sword Dancer backwards.
Oh, maybe the channels, casts both look strong, and Chad coming right back with Yo Premio as well. So I'm pretty logical in the Sword Dancer, but gun to my head, I'll go with Chad. Second off the South American with the O Premio on top.
Very good. And Personal Ensign, seemingly coming down to a Midnight Bisou, a late matchup.
Yeah, and of the two, I do Midnight Bisou a little bit better, although I'm somewhat concerned numbers-wise that her race at Monmouth, it seemed to take a step back, but obviously those were some interesting circumstances. But I do prefer her, and I think a lot of, you know, the Elate is back, which she is. Chatter hopefully helps our price on her. And I do like the Golden Mischief. I only wrote the number down. Number six, should have written the name.
Golden Award. Golden Award. I've talked about her all week. I think she is the interesting third party.
Yeah, I absolutely think she's, you know, figuring out if you can beat one of the obvious two in the top two, she's the one I'm going to get in there and hopefully spice things up.
Boston Spa?
Boston Spa. I do like the Starship Jubilee shipping down. I liked her quite a bit when I was there for Queen's Plate, and just could not figure out what the plan was with her. So I see a lot of confidence in her shipping here to New York, and definitely think she fits, and like Starship Jubilee quite a bit in the Boston Spa. And I think 7-2 would be fair, but I'm actually even hoping for a little bit of float with her as well, and maybe even get a better price. But I would take the morning line.
Well, and the Boston Spa starts the late pick four, the all-stake pick four. Then there's another pick four that starts with the Sword Dancer, which is the last four races on the card. And so there's the, you know, there's the lineup. And so Boston Spa, Personal Ensign, Sword Dancer, and Travers. Nick Tamaro on the line, I think, as well. Nick, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. Ed DeRosa with us as well.
Hey, Ed.
Why don't you run down your Boston Ensign Sword Dancer Travers pick four ticket?
You know, I heard a little bit of what Ed was saying about Starship Jubilee, and I think that there's obviously a lot of, she's worthy of consideration, no question about it. I think that I'm going to be somewhat obvious with everybody else on Secret Message that feels like what could have happened to Diana had she had a bit of a cleaner trip. I'm not thrilled about taking her as the likely favorite. I don't know necessarily what to do with Masha off of the big performance, first time in North America, but she certainly looks like a horse that could elevate herself to graded stakes possibilities. So those are going to be my main three. I think they'll probably end up being the three roughly post-time favorites. And as far as the personal engine goes, and I know I've been on the wrong side of this a couple of times, there's 0% chance, in my opinion, that Elite is going to lose this race. I know I've been banging the Elite drum for way too long. I'll tell you this much. She may lose. She's not going to lose to Midnight Bisou. Midnight Bisou is a considerably better horse than a mile and a 16th. I know that the 16th of a mile shouldn't matter all that much, but in a race where she's probably going to have to come from a little bit off of it, where I think there could be a scenario in which Elite doesn't necessarily get the jump, but can grind it out a lot more than she did at Oaklawn. She's much more seasoned now as the year has gone on. I think she'll win. I actually am going to use She's a Julie as an alternative because I thought She's a Julie spent the shoe V on a dead rail, and I'd like to have her back. And as far as the Sword Dancer, I am an Annals of Time fan, have long been. I think the mile and a half is right in his wheelhouse, and I think he'll have no problem getting a setup, being that he's got a buddy there on the inside who's there to do the job. And I think that'll also benefit Sadler's Joy, who had probably the worst of it in Bowling Green. I know it was a bunched up finish. I'm going to use Ya Primo mainly as a backup, but Ya Primo and Channel Maker really had no excuse last time at all. And they both came up wanting in the stretch. That's probably more of a concern to me for Channel Maker than it is for Ya Primo, given that it was his first start off a layoff and first start in North America. So that's how I'm going to set up those three legs.
And Travers thought.
I'm going to use Tacitus primarily, and as well as looking at Bikinis and Highest Honors. Those are my three A's. I'm going to bet against Code of Honor being a mile and a quarter horse. I'm going to use Mucho Gusto probably somewhat prominently as a backup. But I have to play, if you're a believer in the kind of things that I am, which is that track bias and track profile really do a lot as far as trips go, then you have to bet both Tacitus and Looking at Bikinis, because they both were clearly on the worst part of the racetrack last time. This has now happened twice in a row to Tacitus. I think we've heard some sort of silly things about him being a horse that finds his own trouble all the time, or makes his own trouble, or this and that, blah, blah, blah. We got a lot of equine psychologists out there. But I don't really understand it. The horse has been wide on a day where the rail was great, and he was inside on a day where the rail was bad. It happens sometimes. And generally when that happens twice in a row, those horses really move forward a lot when they get a cleaner run of it. So I'm expecting him to, and I have to use Looking at Bikinis for two reasons, one of which is that, yeah, he was on a dead rail last time. The other part of it is there's not a whole lot of pace in this race. And depending on what Mucho Gusto does coming out of there and how hard Tax is ridden, which, by the way, Tax getting guns to the lead is really not Irad Ortiz's style. So I don't know how much posturing that was on Danny Gargan's part. I think Looking at Bikinis is going to get a forwardly placed trip, and I think he can be very dangerous from there. He had every right to fold his tent and pack it in the Curlin turning for home, and he fought on the whole way. I don't think the distance will be a big problem for him, especially if he's sitting on top of a moderate pace.
Well, and we're just hearing from Scully, too, via the magic of text, that he's on Looking at Bikinis and will fold in some of his other players on the day. He likes Channel Cat to come right back in the Sword Dancer. And Dawn the Destroyer is his offbeat play. And since that gets us into the sprints, we got exactly a minute. Let's do Forgo. Nick.
I think Promises Fulfilled is going to wire. I don't know if Matoli is quite as good
interesting
up there as he is everywhere else. I think Promises Fulfilled will go and establish
interesting
and stay.
Ed.
I'm not going to split hairs between Promises Fulfilled and Matoli, but I do think Bon Razan is the key to get in the number.
The fun price. Killy Beggs captain for me on the price front. Ballerina, Nick.
I am going to bet against Separation of Powers. Separation of Powers is a horse that I think you're supposed to be against. Here's my wild price play for the day, Pacific Gale. Pacific Gale was on the worst part of the racetrack two races in a row and seems to be training forwardly. So I'm going to see if she can get in there at a big price.
How about you, Ed?
My best bet of the day, assuming the morning line holds, is Minute to Start.
to pull off the miracle again. And in the Alan Jerkins, Nick.
I mean, it's chance of last game, right? I don't know how Cole Paul's going to keep up with him early. I mean, just until we see this horse show that he's not something from another planet, we'll have to believe that he is.
Ed.
Agreed. Yep, ditto.
Look at that. We managed to pull it off. I didn't know we'd get everything in, including Scully, without the benefit of hearing Scully's voice. Guys, thanks a lot. Best of luck.
Our pleasure. Good luck, everyone.
Thank you, Steve. Good luck.
NTAM 1215, EJXD2, Ed DeRosa, James_Scully 111. There it is. Earlier, who else was with us? Hammer, Mike Beer, Rich Migliori, Jay Pribman, Dave Grenig, and Greg Montgomery. We pulled it off. We got everybody. Everybody we wanted and expected and hoped and dreamed. Good luck, everybody, today. New York Bread Showcase, and out west, of course, as well, and everywhere else, the Pea Patch and more. Back with you on Monday to recap it all. And, of course, HRRN coverage and down the stretch tomorrow here on Sirius XM. Want to thank Casey, who's back on the beam and pushing the buttons, making the calls, dialing it all up. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you Monday. Have a great weekend.
Soul is hard to find.